This conference will now be recorded.
Right, hello everybody, and welcome to this special puppy teleclass with a very special guest of mine who I actually interviewed, oh goodness, probably about 3 years ago for the first time, for my superhero dog owners show, which is still live on iTunes actually. Amy, you can still see that interview on there. And I've used the app ever since. We're going to talk about the app and stuff now, but I better introduce you. So welcome, Amy Smith.
Hello. Thank you. Thanks, Dom. Thanks for having me back.
You're very welcome, darling. You're very welcome. I'm looking forward to catching up and, yeah, just finding out a bit more about what you do. So these puppy sort of files, if you like, these are hopefully to add a little bit of meat to the bones of what's in the book, you know. So we've had lots of different people on talking about different things, and you run a very successful puppy school over there. You've been doing this for a long while, and obviously we've got the app and stuff as well, which I do mention in the book because I think it's fantastic. But start off, Amy, by telling us a bit about you, what life was like growing up and how you got into dogs and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, cool. So despite the Australian accent, I was actually born in the UK, but I moved here when I was about 3 years old. So it's, I've only really think of myself as an Aussie. But anyway, I am born and bred in England. So there you go. How did I get into dog training? I'd worked in the corporate world for a really long time, always had a huge love for all my own animals and pets, and was always raised with a lot of animals and things, but funnily enough, never ever had a dog growing up. I was just never ever allowed. My mum never let me, which was what it was.
And me neither, me neither.
Isn't it? It's funny, isn't it? But then when I was about 25 and met my now husband, I felt like I could convince him that we could get a dog, which we did. And from there, you know, I went off and I learned how to train my dog, and I did puppy school, and I had the most beautiful little English Cocker Spaniel, and it just kind of evolved from there. And I didn't want to work corporate anymore. I was working with my family. It was difficult. And so I wanted to step out of that corporate industry and jump straight into something to do with animals. So I went off and researched and found the right people that I wanted to work with, and got off and did courses and all that kind of stuff. So it just sort of fell right for me. I remember, it's funny when I talk to any of my friends actually, because they always have a bit of a laugh. They're like, oh, Amy says she's going to be a dog trainer, whatever, and roll their eyes. but then it ended up being the best thing I have ever done in my life, because I've got this great business and, you know, I've had these great opportunities, and, you know, it's they often laugh about how they used to laugh about me, but now I'm so blessed with what I do. So yeah, it's good.
Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. So what did you used to do corporate wise then? What was the proper job?
I used to work in event management. So I used to do a lot of work in sort of for my family's business, but they had a side business of doing big corporate lunches for Australian rugby, Australian cricket. So I would organise lunch for 900 people at big casino here in Sydney called Star City. And, you know, we'd have all fancy speakers, and it was cool. It was a good job. I mean, it kept, like, you have to be impeccably organised. And I used to love doing that sort of work. It was time for a change.
Super duper. So how did you decide to, when you started to drift into the dog training and get more serious about that, did you purposefully go puppy niche into the puppy thing straight away?
I got into some general courses, and in my own mind, I wanted to be a customs dog handler. That's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, wow.
In my head. Uh-huh. I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to be walking around the airport with a lab or a beagle or whatever. I'm not sure why. And I did the course, and I did certain parts of scent detection work, and It was, and it was one of my instructors who's actually now one of my closest friends, a lady by the name of Vicky Austin, who said to me, "Amy, I'm doing a puppy class instructors course, and I'd really like you to sit the course and do it. I think you'd be really good at puppies." And I went, "Oh, okay, sure, why not?" And so I kind of did that, and I loved it, and I got. Found myself a vet clinic to start teaching at, and oh, the rest is history. That was 10 years ago, I think now. So, yeah,
Cool,
that
cool.
maybe.
Yeah, brilliant. And so did you, so what made you, because a lot of people do almost everything, you know, they do one-to-ones and they do, you know, reactive dogs and they'll do recall and all this kind of, you've just, am I right? I'm right in thinking you just do puppies now, yeah?
It is just puppy
Yeah.
school that I do. So yeah, look, I think there is a lot of people that do all of that. For me, the puppy school, it grew really quickly. You know, I remember when
Yeah.
I filled my first ever class and I was like, oh my gosh, six people are coming to listen to me and have me teach them about how to rate, and I was so nervous. But it went really well, and you know, it wasn't long after a few months before I had enough for two classes, and I could run two classes, and I was kind of going, wow, this is great, and you know, and then I came on the scene too. Maybe it's a generational thing, but I jumped right into the social media scene as well with it, and I didn't find that anybody else was massively doing that particularly at that point. Certainly not in my area, I don't think. And look, the business just kind of grew. And I mean, now I have another trainer that works for me, and we've got eight puppy classes a week that we run. So yeah, anywhere between, oh, I don't know, 50 to 60 puppies a week come through puppy school, which is great.
Yeah, wow. Brilliant. Fantastic,
Yeah.
fantastic. So where do they, what age do they start your puppy school then?
Look, I really push them these days to start before 12 weeks.
Yeah.
And in fact, because I am so busy now, I can really knock them back after 12. I mean, you and I both know, and any person in the industry probably knows that the sooner that people can start socializing their puppies, when they get them, the better that puppy's going to be.
Yeah.
And look, I think especially around in the area that we live here, I mean, I'm on the Northern Beaches in Sydney, and it's a really affluent area, so it's very, very minimal risk of picking up any of the bad diseases, or
Yes,
especially
for sure.
parvovirus. So that's
Yeah.
really a positive as well. So I really do drive that home now, I am getting people. I get people that ring up to book into puppy class now, and their puppy hasn't even been born yet. So there's a bit of a joke that it's like private school, and I kind of go, oh, you don't have to book in that early. But yeah, I kind of say to them, once you've got an arrival date for your puppy, 2 weeks prior to that, you should have called me and booked in so that you can get a spot where you want to be.
Brilliant, brilliant, super. No, that makes total sense. Yeah. So, what are the big what are the big mistakes you see people making with their puppies?
Probably waiting.
Most common.
Look, I mean, like we've just covered, probably waiting too long. It's not their fault. It's not pet owners' fault when that happens. It's often the wrong advice from a breeder, the
Yeah.
wrong advice from Google. So they might have Googled something like, oh, when can I take my dog out? And don't go anywhere for the third vaccination. And before you know it, that whole bloody critical phase period is over. And you know, even look, it's not common, I don't find around here anymore, but still we'll get the odd vet that might say, absolutely not, don't take that puppy out. But
Yeah, absolutely. We get
I
that
don't
too.
even find that's common. Yeah, I don't find that's common anymore. So yeah.
Yeah, not taking them
So
out.
that
And
look, that would be a big one.
yeah, and what are the, and what's the, you know, what's the downside of that? What's the downside of not getting this puppy out? You talked about the critical phase, so go into a bit more detail about that. Why is this so important that they do it early?
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, between the ages of 3 and about 16 weeks, a puppy, everything that they experience is going to stay with them. So that's going to be good experiences, bad experiences. If the puppy doesn't have many experiences, you know, they're obviously, that's going to mean they're a little bit unsure of certain things out there in the big bad world. It might be people, it might be noises, it might be something as simple as having the ability to step over a grate that's in the ground. If they haven't achieved that confidently as a young puppy, then it could be scary for them for the rest of their life. So it's that socialization window. And I find that socialization window is probably most mixed up with pet owners by they kind of think it's to do with meeting lots of dogs. And you know, I think that's one of the biggest things that I really try to drive home for them is that socialization is, you know, how does your puppy feel walking around your local shops? Can he sit in a cafe with you and relax while you're having a coffee with your mate? Can, you know, can a pram go past with a screaming toddler in it and your dog not freak out or bark, you know, whatever it might be. Just that everyday stuff that you and I would take for granted.
No, yeah, you're right. Yeah, and it's overlooked, but it's crucial to, you know, because people get their dog because they want to, obviously they want to spend as much time as they can with their dog, and not, you know, when their dog becomes fearful for whatever reason, that then it just restricts the relationship, doesn't it, massively?
Yeah, look, 100%. And then, of course, you know, it's a lifetime of a dog potentially with behavioural issues, and that's debilitating. I mean, you only need to talk to somebody who is, you know, taken ownership of a rescue dog or a foster dog or, you know, a dog that has been poorly socialized, and, you know, they can tell you fact how difficult it can be to live your everyday life with a dog like that.
Yeah, you're totally handicapped, aren't you? Yeah. So what does a class look like then? What kind of stuff are you doing in your classes then to help them to, is it a bit indoor, outdoors? Is it, how does it progress for them, you know?
I'm indoors. I've got two venues that I teach at. I've got a wonderful grooming salon that I teach at in a lovely indoor space with aircon, which over here we desperately need. Because, you know, in some of our summer days, it might be 35 degrees outside, and that's just ridiculous for having puppies outside. They can't work in that sort of environment. And then, of course, in the vet clinic at my other venue. So very much teaching that class environment. I cover a fair amount of theory in my first week of puppy class, and we might teach some really simple behaviours to start getting them, you know, the humans to understand how to train a behaviour, how to mark a behaviour is correct, how to end a behaviour, when to reward, how to reward. I think that's pretty much it. And then each week we cover various topics, but also, you know, we'll teach set behaviours throughout the course as well. So
they're little sponges, aren't they? I mean, they start off a bit, obviously, sometimes it's a bit overwhelming for them. The puppies I'm talking about, not the owners. But you know, they soon settle, don't they? And they soon, you know, they really want to learn, you know, especially that so many pedigrees and stuff these days, you know, they thrive on it, don't you? You know, the more you do with them.
100%, you know, and I think one of the best things for me is when I do start a class and I might have a bit of a shy puppy, and you can sort of see the owner, you can recognize in that owner straight up that they are feeling a little bit disheartened. Their puppy's quiet, their puppy's sort of a bit reserved, just kind of hanging under the seat, you know, sort of like a nervous kid on their first day of school. And as they come along each week, and the joy you see in the owner as they can see that their puppy's confidence is getting better and better week in, week out, to a puppy that walks into class in the third or fourth week like a boss, tail up, wagon, you know, so happy to be there and out in the middle of the room. And, you know, and that's, I think that for me is one of the really great things in class is, you know, when that occurs. That's a big one.
Yeah, being that transformation is brilliant. Yeah, we had that similar thing with the first time we started to do scent workshops and stuff up here and tracking workshops and stuff. It was the dogs were, the owners who brought the dogs along, the dogs were like so interested either in each other or in, you know, eating sheep shit off the floor or wherever it was that we were in a field. But then by the end of the day, you know, they were like just sitting by their owner and, you know, happy, content, and, you know, not bothered by anything else. So no, it's really good. It's fantastic to see. What You talked a bit about sort of shy puppies and stuff there. Is there how do you sort of handle the different kinds of puppies that come in, you know? Because obviously some of them are just naturally more confident, aren't they? And some of them, and how do you sort of, you know, convey that to the owner and sort of, reassure the owner, I suppose, you know, that they're about the type of dog that they've got.
Yeah, sure. Look, I think I specialize in analogies. I try my hardest to give an analogy for pretty much everything that I try to explain. As you know, if I'm trying to explain something about a dog, I'll give them a human analogy that they would understand. With my Shire puppies, look, all of my puppy classes I do on the lead. I don't have any off-lead interaction in my classes, but we certainly do loose lead, nice interactions with, you know, puppies, with the right puppy, hanging out with the right puppy. And you know, on the flip side, yes, we can have some quiet, shyer puppies, but on the flip side, we can also have some extremely boisterous, over-the-top puppies. And you know, so it's always a bit of a balance there. And you know, I mean, a couple of golden rules that I try to really instill is that I've got to have adults on the end of the lead. Not all the time, we get the kids involved, but you know, there's certainly times where the last thing you need is a kid on the end of a lead with a boisterous staffy charging towards, you know, a Pomeranian that's never been outside before or something like that, and it's stressful or whatever it might be, or you know, or on the flip side, a really over the top, you know, poodle that kind of wants to jump all over the shy cattle dog, or you know, you can't have that sort of stuff going on. But no, I think that that's pretty much how I try and do things so that it stays relatively under control.
And what sort of advice do you have? Do you have a lot of people who bring kids along and to the classes and stuff, or do you recommend it? Is it
I always say that kids are welcome. I
a
am a mum of three boys myself, so I have some advice around it. I get a lot of parents that are possibly a little bit unrealistic with how interested their kid's going to be in training the puppy. So my advice to parents bringing kids probably under the age of 10 is to bring them something to do, because it's a long time for kids to be expected to sit still and listen to me. And while the information is great and it's interesting, it's engaging, it's not when you're a 10-year-old boy or a 10-year-old girl. So I definitely sort of say that to them. I find a lot of the time my week one class will always have a lot of kids, and my week two class, my numbers have halved because most parents have organized alternate arrangements for their kids, because I think they realize it's quite challenging managing kids, trying to learn how to train a puppy, working with a puppy that is not trained, and that, you know, the humans themselves aren't trained. So it's hard work. And look, I did puppy class with my own puppy who's 16 months now. I went off at 18 months, I don't know. But I did puppy class with one of my very good friends, Libby Young. And you know, the only kid of mine that I took was my 15-year-old son. I the little one, there was no way.
No, no, no.
Just
Yeah,
no
you can be
way.
realistic, haven't you?
Yes, yeah, it's hard work.
And I think I talk about this in the book, but you I'm not a big fan of people buying dogs or, well, cats or anything for as gifts, you know. And I'm certainly
No.
not a fan of them getting them for kids and stuff. And it just you if you I think people have to realize, like, if you're the one who's paying for this dog, you know, you're the one who's looking after it. You're the one who's doing most of the
Absolutely.
walking, you know, the training, everything. And if you're not prepared to, you know, don't expect somebody else to do it if you're not.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
Good stuff. So, is there some kind of blanket advice that you would give to people for when they're bringing a puppy home for the first time, you know, with the kids and stuff?
Yeah, look, I'm always a big pusher of things like management. I really drive home for families with kids that it's pretty unrealistic to think they're going to bring a 8-week-old, essentially infant animal into their home, and it's just going to toddle around the family and be all lovely and wonderful. I mean, the reality is it's going to jump and chase your kids, jump on them, it's going to bite them, it's going to chew your furniture, it's going to, you know, toilet around your house. So I really try to drive home the importance of management. And I've done some training videos. I did them a while ago now, but and I send those to all of my clients when I first speak to them, when they book in, and that kind of gives them a bit of an indication about crate training and, you know, maybe some puppy fencing and how to get puppies to sleep well at night and that kind of stuff. Because the amount of times I've had clients say to me, oh my God, it's worse than, or it's the same as having a newborn baby. And I often respond with, I think it's worse. It's harder. You know, if you've never done it before,
the baby sleeps double again.
Yes. Yeah. So, but yeah, I think that's a big one. And that's where I think I find a lot of clients, you know, they find that hard to grasp. That my advice is often do something with your puppy, get it out, do some training, do some socializing, do some enrichment, do whatever, spend a bit of time with the puppy and then put it away. Put it into its crate to have a sleep. Put it down for some downtime because they need a truckload of sleep, a truckload as well.
And like you just mentioned about the crate there, I'm a big fan of the crate as well. It makes everything so much easier, doesn't it? You know, with the management, sleep, weighing inside, chewing things up, it's like you can eliminate almost so many problems, can't you? With just by using the crate.
Prevention. Yeah. Prevention. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So that's a big one. But yeah, I love that one.
Cool. Well, so what? Let's stick with the crate for a second then. What do you How do you help people? How do you recommend people get their puppy used to a crate when they first come?
Obviously, if our breeders have done some work with crates, that makes life a lot easier. I kind of sort of say to most of my puppy owners, you know, just have it there, have it set up, have it open. You know, maybe put the puppy's bed in there. Don't put a puppy in, chop it or walk away. You're probably going to traumatize the poor little thing. I also kind of advise just kind of do whatever works in the first couple of nights, however to get that little puppy to settle. And you know, just introductions of the crate should be done really, really slowly and in a really positive way. If you're going to do some stuff with a puppy in a crate, then prepare to sit close to it, put your favorite TV show on and sit next to the puppy, things like that, and help them to settle and, you know, tired, make sure they're tired when they're going in. And just slow introductions.
Do you recommend that they leave the crate downstairs or take it up with them, or like you say, is it just whatever works?
I'm a big believer in getting a puppy asleep on the floor next to you in the first couple of nights. I certainly did that with Brian, and by the third night, you know, I'd progressively moved him away a couple of meters, you know, each night, and then he was at the end of the bed, the puppy loses visual access to you, but they're now at a point where they're starting to settle down in their crate. My breeder was fantastic though. She had done crate training with the pups and separated them from the litter and things like that. So for him, it was pretty cruisy. He slept in his crate all night, the first night, not a problem. And we never really had any dramas with him at all. And then I do talk to them about the importance of progressing their puppy to sleep independently from them, but doing it as a gradual process because I still find there's a fair bit of advice out there people still may choose to do that, but you know, putting the puppy away and just shutting the door and letting them cry it out, which I just think is probably a little bit too traumatizing in many cases, probably for the human and the puppy.
Yeah, well, it is, isn't it? Yeah, for sure. And then the frustration builds, and you end up, rather than just creating a situation where, like you said, you could have had the puppy next to you and sort of gradually settle in, you go from, you know, like you said, shutting him away to like, oh my God, I feel awful, getting him back out again. And then you've opened like another whole can of worms, haven't you, and stuff. You
know? Absolutely. Yeah, exactly.
That was fantastic advice. Excellent. So I'm going to move on to the app in a second and talk about how that came about and stuff. But you mentioned at the start, and people who read the book will know about this, why this first kind of 16 weeks are so crucial, you know, to get all these things done, get this puppy experience and lots of different things. And we're trying to sort of, we're just trying to sort of get the puppy used to everything. You know, we want him to get used to everything because this window closes and I mean, you still can do it after that, but it's not the same, is it? You know, it's not the same as getting the puppy used to it.
Absolutely not.
More unusual thing. So is this how did the app kind of come about then? This is a soundproof puppy app we're talking about, by the way, if anybody hasn't downloaded it yet.
Yes, go and download it if you don't have it. the app is a funny one. When I was teaching puppy class, I certainly, in my area that I live, a real typical kind of fella that lives on the northern beaches is what we call a tradie, which is short for tradesman. So plumber, builder, you know.
Yeah.
Fellas driving around in their utes and, you know, they've always got their dog on the back. And it's it was really, really common. And you can pick them. You can pick your tradies when they come into class. They're often maybe you've come in after work or whatever, and you can just pick that they're a tradie in many cases. And I used to have these guys come into class and they'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm going to take the dog to work and he's going to be a building site dog with me and he's going to have the best life. He's going to go everywhere. And I'd be like, oh, look, that is awesome because your dog is going to have a great life because he's going to get to go everywhere with you for probably the next 15 years and life's going to be amazing. But I would talk to them about how stressful it could be for a young puppy on a building site. So, you know, if you've got this brand new puppy and he comes to work with you and all of a sudden you're 10 metres away shooting off a nail gun, that's going to scare the bejesus out of your puppy. So I used to say to these guys, just record a few sounds on your phone, you know, use the voice recorder or use the sound recorder on your iPhone and record away just a bit of building site noise and come home, play it to your puppy while you're feeding him his dinner. And nice and low, and just start getting him used to some of these sounds that you're going to expect him to kind of deal with throughout the rest of his life. And every time I would say it, I'd go, geez, that's a good idea for that. And I used to say it all the time. In fact, I can't believe, no one ever stole my idea, which was great. But I used to talk about it, and I used to do a little bit of half-hearted research on developing an app. And I was pregnant with my third son at the time, and you know, it was just kind of one of those little ideas that was sailing in and out of my head. And then about 2 weeks after he was born, I think from memory, maybe before, I might have been developing it when I was pregnant, I can't remember, but I went, you know what,
baby brain,
exactly. I'm gonna have a crack at this. And through some of my family's contacts, because my family is very much in an e-learning background and that sort of thing. I'd rung my brother and, do you know people that can build apps? Yes, I do. He's this person, he's that person. And my brother tried to tell me that I should bring out an app about what to do if you get bitten by a dog. And I was trying to tell him that's not a good idea for an app. That's strange. Like, obviously, I've been bitten by a dog. Let me just download an app from the app store. And he didn't really grasp my idea either, but that's all right. He's not much of a dog person. But anyway, I went with my idea and I stuck with it and spoke to somebody that gave me the advice on how to develop an app and put me in touch with a developer who was based in Singapore. And I just bought it out initially for iPhone. So, yeah, and it was great. You know, I remember, I mean, one of the funniest things that I think happened was there's a lot of faffing about when you've got to get an app up in the App Store. It's hard. You've got to have developer accounts. You've got to, you know, there's all this stuff that you've got to set up. And I remember getting a little notification on my developer app that said Soundproof Puppy Training is now live in the App Store. And I was teaching Puppy Pass at the time. And I sort of went, oh, my God, like, that's so exciting. And I went to download it. And my credit card was maxed out, so it got knocked off, like got knocked back. I couldn't even buy my own app. So I had to ring my mum and say, Mum, give me a credit card because I need to put it on my iTunes account so I can buy my own app, because you do it in a different account to, you know, your own personal iTunes account. And I was the first person to download Soundproof Puppy Training, but my mum paid for it. So there you go.
Oh, good old mum.
So. Good old mum. But, yeah, and then, look, the app has just been one of those things that has taken off. I think initially I thought that I would be able to market it to puppy owners going, hey, you've got a puppy, you should buy this app. And I really worked hard at that and it didn't really get me anywhere. And I think any dog trainer will vouch, unless things are kind of handed to them on a platter, they're not that interested. You know, it's not a big thing. So then I started to think, well, what if I market it to people like me, people that are teaching puppy class to, you know, that would be happening all over the world, which of course it is. And so that's what I started to do. And I mean, look, that's it. It really kind of put me on the map. And, you know, I've met people like yourself and lots of different people through just being in dog training groups and things like that, talking about the app. And now, I mean, I don't even know for how long now, probably 5 years, I think it sells about 600 copies a month.
Yeah, wow.
Which
Jesus,
is quite
fantastic.
A lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a millionaire or anything, Dom, but like it's
no,
it just
sell,
sits there.
I sell side earner, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it just sits there and runs at a profit, and I have to update it. I did a big rebuild last year of the app just to keep up with, you know, technology of, you know, whatever iPhone
yeah.
has done, and it's been out for Android for a long time now as well. So, yeah.
Does someone do that for you or what? Or did you have to get technical up? Did you have to learn how to do
stuff? Yeah. No, I don't know how to do that stuff. I mean,
no,
I've got a good
yeah.
mate that did all my graphics and things for the app and did all the sort of design behind it, which I've never changed any of that. I love it. I don't think I ever would change any of it. It's pretty simple, straightforward,
yeah,
and easy
nice,
to
yeah.
use. But yeah, no, I've got developers over in India that look after both, both platforms, so being Android and iPhone. And the boys are great. I've attempted to speak to them on the phone a couple of times. It's a little challenging, but they're good fellows. They look after me really well, and we just tend to liaise via email if there's any dramas, you know, or if I need to make any changes or updates or anything like that. I just shoot them an email, and they get it done, and it's
brilliant.
Perfect.
So what was the kind of workload for it then to get it from idea to in there?
It was if I did it again, I would be much better at doing it because I was learning it kind of as I went, which I think that's anything though. The more of the work that I found was the getting in the dog training forums and started to get it moving, you know, get people aware of it and things like that. So, I mean, like I'm doing with you now, not that I'm complaining at all because it's 5 to 10 at night here in Sydney, but I would be up at really random hours because I would be invited to chat or be the person, you know, pinned post in a huge dog training forum, and they would just fire questions at me and ask me about how I do, you know, exactly the same sorts of stuff we're doing right now.
Yeah,
and I think that was probably more draining because I had a newborn and I was breastfeeding and I was up three times tonight as it was, and you know, and then I was like, oh my god, the alarm's set for 3 a.m. I've got to get up and do that interview in that dog training
Christ,
group
yeah.
and but you know
yeah.
but look, it all paid off. It really was a great choice, and I don't, you know, I don't ever regret all the hard work that went into it, that's for sure.
No, definitely not. It's fabulous. In many ways, what you just said is very similar to like the book process. I've got a lot of guys in my sort of mentoring groups who are writing their own books at the moment. And it's like a tremendous amount of work to write the book and get it ready. But then it's like just as much work to market it afterwards, you know. And like you think when it's done that it's like, I'm finished. But you're not. You're just starting then, you know. So, yeah, really interesting that you found out it was a similar thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's no different, is it? It's just, it's work, and you either sink your teeth in and get it done, or it's a half-baked idea, so.
Yeah, fab. And the app, I mean, I'm not even joking when I say that. I mean, I recommend it, I use it. It's so, like, user-friendly, and you've got everything on there that you want. It takes all the hassle out of it, because previous to that, I think I was using some, like, YouTube videos and stuff, but it's just everything's in one place. You can just change it around, and you could get the puppy. I think this is such a this fearful issue. It's like what we said earlier on, it can be so debilitating, can't it? And this the puppy never get the chance to develop into the kind of dog that you want him to be, and you can't do things with him and stuff. And it's so easy if you're on the ball and you're getting there early enough, and you've got this information that you're giving out now, and you know, you spend a couple of quid to get the thing downloaded, and you remember to do it every day. You can, like, in a similar way to preventing the crate prevents the weeing on the floor and chewing up the tables and stuff, this prevents that, or this can help prevent that, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, even if they owners just do a tenth of what you and I would do with a new dog, you turn around and you go, it's enough. It'll help. It'll make a big difference for that dog's life and that family's life. So, yeah.
Huge, huge difference, yeah. So let's move on a bit. What what kind of problems do you see when people kind of start to move outside with the puppy? You know, because, and what kind of advice do you give? Because obviously it's like two stages. Well, there are many stages, but there's like, you get the puppy home, you remember to socialize it, you build up a bond with him, you know, like you say, we teach him to get used to the crate and sleep on his own and all this kind of thing. And then we start, and then we feel like we're getting somewhere. Then we step outside and, well, not step outside, but start walking outside, you know, on lead and stuff. And it's like, Jesus, things can like fall apart quite quickly sometimes, can't they? Because of all these distractions.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, distractions are obviously a huge thing. I talk to my clients significantly with young puppies about don't be worried about obedience and, you know, all of that and sits and loosely walk. Just kind of get out there and have a bit of fun, take it all in. A big thing I think a lot of people struggle with is that they think they need to walk their puppies for exercise. That's a big one that I've got to try and get across the line for them, that they just don't need to do that. If they've got 20 minutes to take a puppy for a walk, get in a car, drive somewhere new that you haven't been with that puppy, get outside for 5-10 minutes there and let the puppy take in all those new sounds, smells, experiences, different surfaces, meet a few people, whatever it is. So I think that's hard. And then I also think that I find that people struggle with other dog owners bringing up dogs maybe to meet puppies, which I don't massively recommend, certainly not on leash like that in that sort of confined situation. And of course, people that come up to meet puppies that then want to invite that puppy up to jump, give them a cuddle, you know, reinforcing not so great choices. But on the flip side, the puppy is still having a good experience with a stranger. So, you know, it's just trying to explain to them the balance. I try to give them things that I used to do. I mean, when I used to go out with Brian when he was in his critical phase period, I used to put a hat on. I used to put earphones in so that I just didn't look as approachable, which sounds really awful. But I didn't want to stop to every single person. And I think that's a big one as well. I see, you know, I'm often posting questions on things like my Insta story. What, you know, hit me with questions, what can I help you with? And a lot of people are really struggling with puppies that expect to meet every single person that walks past. So they're pulling up stumps every time a person is a distraction. So they've sometimes taken that too far with their socialization. So I think that those are the biggest issues. It's just trying to get people to understand the balance of, you know, what they're trying to achieve at this particular point with a young dog, with a young puppy.
Yeah, yeah. And I you know, you're dead right. And I recommend people be a bit more, be selfish, you know, be a bit selfish. I don't mean be like a complete arsehole, but, you know, be a bit selfish. Put your puppy's needs first, you know, put the puppy's needs before the needs of anybody and some random who wants, you know, might have good intentions, but it ain't going to help you, you know, develop this puppy, is it? You know, you want to be a bit selfish.
No, exactly. 100%. So, and that's a big one that I try to talk to them about is understanding the puppy's body language. How's he feeling in that situation? Is he comfortable? And if he's not, he needs to be able to feel like he can escape that situation and just kind of move away from it if that's the case and move to a distance that he feels safe, you know. So, yeah, that's a big one. And I just try to use examples, things that I've seen, things that I've witnessed happen, you know, experiences and things like that that I've seen out in the street. So, yeah.
Yeah. So what about, let's quickly touch on that, body language. What kind of things are we looking for? You know, to make sure the puppy's looking,
Yeah, look, I mean, I think it's pretty, I mean, to you and I, it's pretty obvious when, and many, obviously, people in the industry, it's pretty obvious when a dog is pretty stressed. We can see that in their body language. It might be, you know, and look, I'm always trying to talk to my clients about the really obvious ones. You know, the tail between the legs, the puppy that's looking like it doesn't want to move, it's a little bit scared, the big eyes, whatever it might be. And then I do try to talk to them about some of the more subtle things as well, the lip licking, the head turning, the ears back, stuff that they wouldn't even really probably, you know, clue onto. I talk about that a lot with kids and interactions as well, because that's obviously so, so, so important. So yeah, and I mean, the other thing that I do in class is, you know, certainly when I was puppy raising Brian, I used to take my poor 15-year-old son at the time everywhere with me so that he could photograph us and video us and I've got a lot of different bits of footage of, you know, Brian doing certain things, and we get those pictures out. And one of the things I do in my classes is I make everyone, as long as they've got an iPhone, and I airdrop pictures to them while I'm teaching so that we can all be looking at the same thing on the screen. And right. we might have an open discussion about body language. What is it about this picture that is good? What do you notice about the puppy that says he's really comfortable in the environment, and, you know, things like that. So I think it's just trying to get clients to sort of understand that stuff.
Yeah.
That's just so important so that they don't get caught in those bad situations. Because one bad situation for a puppy or one bad experience can stay with them for life. And it may not present straight away, but in 6 months, 12 months down the track, boom, you've got this really significant problem in a puppy just due to something that happened to him during critical phase.
Yeah, you've got to be so, so careful. So what about, let's move on a little bit. What about when, so we dealt with like how to deal with walking past strangers and that kind of thing, and mm-hmm. approaching other dogs and all that, and or not approaching them as we probably mm-hmm. should be doing. What about when we start to, the owners are wanting to let the dog off lead or let the dog off on a long lead or something, you know, give the dog a little bit mm-hmm. more freedom to explore, and how mm-hmm. would you recommend they do that?
Yeah, look, I mean, I am not pushing for them to do things like go to dog parks and things like that. We have dog parks here where they're designated off-leash areas, and I don't really know what it's like in the UK. I suppose you can just walk through fields and things, can't you? But, you know, here we get these designated dog parks, and they're usually a big free-for-all. So I really talk about the fact that, you know, putting a puppy in a situation like that is kind of, and here's one of my analogies. In fact, I can't even claim this one. I heard this from a vet, and I thought it was brilliant from a vet. He said, taking a puppy to a dog park is the equivalent of putting an under sixes child in an open men's game of touch football. It's not supposed to be a contact sport, but that kid is going to get bowled over. He's not going to enjoy himself. It's going to be too fast, too overwhelming, and he's probably never going to want to play footy again. And I actually use that analogy all the time. I really like it, probably because of Club Boy.
Cracker,
But, so I do talk to them about that. But, you know, I mean, I'm certainly promoting them to get their puppies out onto long lines and things like that in areas where they can start working on, you know, a bit more exploring and things, but more so, you know, especially around their recall training and starting to teach their puppies to come when called around distractions. And they can do that in a non-off-leash area. So they can go to a park with a puppy on a, you know, 15-metre lead and practice recalls around kids that are maybe riding bikes around on the outskirts of that park, or, you know, birds or whatever else, distractions and things like that. So,
Cool. Good stuff. And do you, when we talked about the fear stages and stuff before, do you prep the owners for, like, the forthcoming fear stages, you know, like when the puppy's entering kind of 8, 9, 10 months old and stuff for the second?
I do talk about that, and you know, the secondary fear imprint stage, and I talk about when that may occur. And, you know, we always tend to especially bring that up specifically with any of my working dog families. That's a big one, I think, for them. And that always leads me into talking about desexing male dogs as well. It's a hot topic these days, but I talk about the fact that, you know, those sorts of all of a sudden things that your puppy has been totally fine with and he's had good socialization to can just suddenly be a little bit scary again around that secondary fear imprint stage, and just talking about how to handle that. I mean, for me with Brian, that certainly cropped up around the 7 month mark, and if I was in a large open space and another human entered, didn't matter if they had a dog, didn't have a dog, he would lose his lollies, you know. It was just really, really stressful. And I speak about that in class. And for me, the easiest solution there was to just walk him away from the situation, but just give him a bit of time. We had a few weeks off of not going into those areas, just while he sort of overcame a bit of fear and got a bit more confident as well. And you know, and the problem went away pretty quick, which was great. So, you know, I do sort of discuss all those sorts of things with them as well. And I really try to drive home to my male puppy owners to avoid de-sexing their puppies at 6 months. You know, we want that testosterone. And I mean, again, another one of my analogies for that, and I get all the blokes in the room nodding, you know, nodding when I'm talking about it, is, you know, like, my son's 16. If I castrated him, would he grow into the man that he should be? And the answer is no. There are certain hormones that he needs to mature and to, you know, get that sort of confidence. So I do find myself talking, that's a big one for me these days as well. So it's important.
Yeah, very much. Good stuff. Good stuff, Amy. This has flown over. It's been fantastic. I've really enjoyed talking you again. No, it's been absolutely ace. Where can people go to where can they go to get the app? What's the app called, and have you got a website and stuff as well where they can go and check you out?
So the app is called Soundproof Puppy Training. You'll find it in the app store for Apple, look, for iPhones and iPad. If you look for it for an iPad, it is actually just an iPhone app, but you can download it for iPad and it will work as an iPad. It'll work as an app on an iPad. It just misses a couple of features on the iPad. So for example, with Soundproof Puppy Training app, if you're using the clipper sounds on the app, the phone is set and programmed to vibrate at the same time. So you can start to introduce the feeling. You can't do that with an iPad. You're not going to hold an iPad on a puppy. And then, of course, you can just download it in the Google Play Store. But you'll always find links to it sitting on my website. Just Google Amy's Puppy Preschool, and I should come up, I think, around the world.
Super duper. That's fantastic, Amy. Thank you once again.
Cool.
And hopefully I'll speak to you again sometime.
Yeah, for sure. Cheers, Dom.
Bye.
See ya.